Hebrews chapter 12. Begin reading in verse 28. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. For our God is a consuming fire. Let brotherly love continue. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing, some have unwittingly entertained angels. Remember the prisoners as if chained with them, and those who are mistreated, since you yourselves are in the body also. Marriage is honorable among all, and the bed undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers God will judge. You remember, as we entered this portion, which is introduced in the closing verses of chapter 12, carried on into chapter 13, we have practical aspects which have been basically theologically addressed through the whole epistle, mainly, that is, to hear God. While you can hear Him, God is speaking, hear Him, to believe Him, to trust Him, to persevere and continue in Him, having always in contrast that old covenant and the failures of it, set before us the new covenant and the excellences in Christ and in the grace of God to meet the exceedingly great and marvelous, wonderful demands and commands that are incumbent upon us in it. Seeing then that we're receiving this kingdom which cannot be shaken, we must have grace. And then he enters into this, which is actually the second table of the covenant, the first of being which, love God with all your heart, with all your soul, and all your might, and all your strength. And the second, like unto it, love your neighbor as yourself. And we spoke to you last Lord's Day under this topic, brotherly love. Kingdom living, brotherly love. In it, we are first of all enjoined in a particular and a general way to a fraternal and a sororal love for brothers and sisters which are in Christ. And he developed that first of all in this love just of one another as Christians, but not only Christians, but strangers. That is, people you don't have any idea who they are, or what they are, or their value, or what they amount to, or their potential, or anything. That we have this privilege and this responsibility and this character as royal priests, kingdom people, to entertain, to be hospitable, to joyfully seize on every opportunity to do good to and for any person. Not only those, but also even those who are in bondage, those who are afflicted by whatever means, be it the kingdoms of this world, political bondage, physical bondage, but especially that spiritual bondage we call sin. And we are admonished more and more from the beginning of the history of redemption, even till now, to remember that we were also once slaves. That's what he told the children of Israel. You remember that you were slaves. You were bound. You had no liberty. But God had mercy on you and brought you out. And so we are continually admonished to be reminded from when we're come. And we see people with various ugly, bad, disgusting, hateful, intolerable bondages, that we not hold them in contempt, but we sympathize with them, realizing we also in a natural body. We are also living in this world, and except for this great grace, we would still be where those people are whom we might be too prone to hold in contempt. Now, our text for today is found in verse 4, one verse. Kingdom life, marriage, that part of kingdom life that is encompassed in this word, marriage. Now, I could very easily make a series out of this. It is such an enormous subject, such an enormous topic in taking up all the aspects, the contemplation of marriage, and the outworking of the in marriage, and the everything about that, and make several messages of it. I'm not going to do that. I realize that this is something that needs to be addressed, and it is a popular subject when people kind of weary with too much of the theological or spiritual aspects of the gospel. They want to get down to the nitty-gritty in real life. Well, you don't get down to more nitty-gritty in real life than you get into in marriage. You can really get into it there. But we're going to confine ourselves to mainly to the narrow scope of marriage that is addressed in our text today. Marriage is honorable among all, and the bed undefiled. But fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. It will be necessary, however, at the outset, to have clear thoughts in our mind about what marriage is. Now, I know you've been to weddings, and you've heard the preacher address this and read some scriptures, and most of them tell you a little bit about what marriage is, and most folks not paying too much attention to the preacher at that time. They're looking at the groom and the bride, and they're all busy with this sort of thing. And so you're not distracted by those things today. And so let us clear-headedly consider some things. Marriage is the real. I underline the word real. It is the real physical and psychological union of one male and one female. It is never any more or less than this. There can't be but one of each species, and one has got to be a male and the other female. You can't make anything else out of it. That's what it is. Just one of each, that are brought into a physical and a psychological union, and I might say it is also an economical union, financial union, all concerns of this present life. That is, this union of these two people for as long as both of them are alive. That's what it is. It is not a spiritual union. It involves only the mortal body, that which lives and exists and has to do with this present age and this present life, and it is utterly dissolved by death. It does not go beyond the grave. It begins at the time when they are brought together and ends when one of them ceases to live. Now, I say it is not a spiritual union because a spiritual union exists only between Christ and the church, his redeemed, his elect, and it also exists between brothers and sisters in Christ. They have that spiritual union. Now, there can be indeed a spiritual union between a husband and wife if they are both Christians. But that union exists not because they got married, had nothing to do with it. Marriage they had that spiritual union before they were married, if they were Christians. It is also true that there is spiritual union between brothers and sisters in Christ who are not married to one another and have no physical and psychological union. Nevertheless, they have a spiritual union. That is, it is possible for a wife to have a spiritual union with a man who is not her husband and vice versa. But let us understand that that is the spiritual realm also and must never be confused. And so we see that this is altogether something that has to do with this present life and this present body. It is listed among those carnal things with which the world is occupied, and unknowingly until the coming of Christ, eating and drinking, buying and selling, building houses, planting crops, reaping, giving and receiving in marriage. That's what people do on this present earth. Has to do with this present life. Now, marriage is witnessed by God. And it is testified by God, but it is not a heavenly transaction. People say, are marriages made in heaven? They are made in heaven only on this sense, that is, that they are ordained by God in the sense in which all providential happenings are ordained by God. But don't get the illusion that there is a register in the courthouse in heaven and your marriage is on record there for an eternal register. Now, that's what Mormons teach. In fact, they teach that that is the way that you're saved. That's the way God got to be God, through marriage. Carries on. And if you are a Mormon wife, one of the fellow's wives, you know, and you are fortunate enough to please your husband enough, that when he's raised from the dead, then he'll raise you so you can be your wife, his wife in the hereafter. And if you're not, you know, he might just leave you in the grave. So you have all kind of perversions and distortions of what marriage is, but the Bible is very clear about that. Jesus told those who came asking questions, here's this woman had seven husbands, they all died. Which one's going to be her husband in heaven? He said, you're just awful ignorant to be a Jew. Why, you don't understand the resurrection or the power of God. In heaven, there are no marriage there. There are no husbands and wives there. If we know one another, we will not know one another as husband and wife, but as brothers and sisters in Christ. Just a few words about the purposes and the blessedness of marriage. There are a few main ones. First, it has the purpose of the perpetuation of the race in a holy manner, that the race may be perpetuated in a holy manner, and that the children may be of a godly sort. That is, not only may we perpetuate and propagate the race, but they will be brought forth as God-fearing descendants. And we're not saying that there's something about the marriage that can ensure that your children are Christians, but it can certainly ensure that they would have the knowledge and the fear of God, and that they will know that there is a God who has ordered things, and that we are made in His image. We're not beasts. We're not cats and dogs and armadillos and terrapins and frogs and snakes. That there is something distinction and a distinct purpose that God has in man, and they have therefore a dignity and an order and a responsibility that transcends all of the lower life of creation. It is ordered so that the children of this male and this female will have the benefit, as he certainly needs, the benefit to be nurtured by both parents. a daddy as well as a mama. Now, whether it be a boy or a girl, they will need both, because this is what mankind is made up of. They need both. Marriage is to secure and ensure that he shall have both a mama and a daddy. Now, a little later on, I'm going to get into some exceptions and some latitude and some liberties in these things. But what I'm setting forth now is the rule, the purposes. Now, this is not the sole purpose of marriage. There are people who say that the only reason for two people getting married is that they should raise kids. They should have a family. If they're not going to have family, no point getting married. Well, while readily pointing out the selfishness and the wrongness of many couples nowadays who don't want to be troubled with kids, who don't want to have children, and certainly don't want more than one or two, just the least trouble they can have and get it over with as quick as you can. But this is unhealthy. But it is also erroneous to say that the propagation of the race is the only purpose for marriage. It is not true. That is one, but there are others. In fact, there is one more fundamental than that one. It is to provide both the man and the woman with a needed complement. God made man in two parts, the female part and the male part. It is to complete them in that sense, the second half of a whole, a needed helper, a companion. The first thing God said about man was this: it's not good that he should be alone. Now, once again, we're talking about the rule. Again, we will talk about a little bit helpers. But that is primarily the most fundamental purpose for which God made the woman and brought her to the man. Thirdly, the purpose of marriage provides and sanctifies, that is, makes holy, a sphere or an enclave for legitimate exercise of those affections and sexual needs which the Creator deliberately instilled in the creature. God does not give us desires and needs, whatever they may be, emotional, physical, mental, whatever they might be, for which he has not provided a legitimate and a holy sphere and area in which they may be addressed. God did this in the institution of marriage. And finally, the fourth purpose of marriage is, and I hope you will understand that there ain't even a Catholic goosebump on me anywhere when I say marriage is a sacrament. Now, when I say it's a sacrament, I do not say it's a sacrament of the church, or it has anything to do with salvation, or it's something that has to be administered by a priest. I'm using the proper understanding of the word sacrament, which is simply the same thing. When we observe the Lord's Supper or baptism, it portrays something. It is something you do which portrays a spiritual truth. It is a revelation of a truth. That is the sense that marriage portrays Christ and the church. It's something that God has set before our eyes to give us a little idea about the relationship between the Lord and his people. That is one of the many reasons that God is so jealous for what we are addressing here today when he says, marriage is honorable in all. Now I want to, when we get a little bit further along, we want to exegete that particular passage, and you'll understand what I'm talking about when we do. Now there are some liberties and some exceptions here. We will not find in the Decalogue or anywhere else, certainly not in the New Covenant, where men and women are commanded to get married. Not at all. We won't find that. We are told of those who are to be fruitful. And, of course, we have to even recognize that that has been modified some when there was only one man and one woman on earth at the time. Certainly the responsibility to be fruitful was a little bit more incumbent upon them when we've got, you know, a few billion couples around to kind of help with the job of replenishing the earth. We don't have to feel like it is all that incumbent upon us to provide so many. But what I'm saying is this, that marriage is not imposed upon anyone if so gifted and if so providentially worked, one may remain celibate and abstain. If he does remain celibate, he remains celibate by total abstination for sexual activity. There is no legitimacy for any kind, I say any sort of sexual activity, out of marriage. Marriage is the one enclave, the one arema, in which God has sanctified that. Now, when people do not marry, it is not considered, although we say the other is the usual thing, it is not abnormal. It is unusual, but it is not abnormal, and it is certainly no more nor no less godly. Even the Apostle Paul was a little prejudiced against marriage. He thought you could serve the God a little bit more efficiently, a little bit more effectively, a little bit more devoutly if you weren't married. And hey, he's probably right about that. But he begrudgingly admitted that if you couldn't contain, the best thing for you to do is to get married. We also say, although, since we have said that the union of a man and a woman is to exist and is permanent until one of them dies, yet we also say marriage is not indissoluble, that it may be dissolved while both are alive and its obligations canceled. The Bible gives two conditions under which that marriage no longer exists, the union no longer exists, and one of them is fornication and the other is desertion. There is a difference between the breaking up of a marriage and a divorce. Nearly all the translations of the Bible, nearly everyone who writes on these things, confuse the two issues. But the dissolving of a marriage and a divorce are two separate things altogether. A divorce is nothing but a legal recognition of the fact that the marriage has already been dissolved. A marriage is dissolved when one person not simply commits adultery, not simply commits one isolated, illegitimate sexual act, but when they become sexually wanton. And when they become sexually wanton, and actually that's what the word fornication means, it means sex outside of marriage, but it really is translated as whoredom. The person simply becomes unfaithful. There is no marriage. The marriage is already dissolved. There's no union there. When one partner leaves the other, abandons the other, of course, there is no longer any union. Now, the marriage is already gone. You don't have a marriage. It's gone. Now, how can we say that marriage is indissoluble and then say it can't be dissolved under certain conditions? To the party of a marriage, so far as he is concerned, he cannot ever warrant or consider a thought of dissolving this marriage. This is something that may happen to him. And if that happens to him, the marriage is no more. If the partner leaves, If the partner becomes unfaithful, if the partner dies, his marriage is broken. But until that point, there is no consideration that there will ever be a dissolution of this marriage. It is as long as I live. Now, the second thing we want to say about marriage connects it with the thought that has been introduced in chapter 12, verse 28. Marriage is a kingdom institution. We're talking about kingdom living, life in the kingdom. Seeing, therefore, we are receiving this unshakable, unmovable kingdom. We're kings and priests in Christ. We're a royal priesthood. We're peculiar people. We're special people. We're living in a kingdom and a realm that no one else lives in. And because of that, there is a peculiar government. There's a peculiar life. There is a different life for us than everyone else. Kingdom living. And he brings up immediately in this matter of kingdom living, this matter of marriage. And because of that, it is a kingdom institution. The king himself instituted it. It is God who brought it into being. And he brought it into being immediately. The first two people on this earth were married. That is, the first institution that appeared was a marriage. He brought the woman to the man. And therefore, it is the basic unit of social order. God set it up that way. That is, marriage belongs to servants of the king, to Christians, that's who it belongs to. Now, the world has taken it up. Because of the Christian influence, it has corrupted it terribly. We'll say a little bit more about that, but it is basically a Christian institution. It is among mortal men the highest, the most sacred, the most intimate, the most binding covenant between mankind. Nothing is so binding. Nothing is so incumbent upon us. Nothing demands more filial integrity and obedience to it than marriage. Within marriage, this basic unit of social order, the most rigorous trials of love, of character, of integrity, of virtue, of nobility, those will be tried. Every one of these will be exercised and developed, or their lack will be discovered in marriage. When Paul says, nevertheless, in such there shall be trouble, he wasn't kidding. Now, if, dear friend, if you have a problem getting along with somebody else, you don't need to get married. All the tests and trials of any reaction with people, that will be brought to its most severe and trying trial in the marriage. And in that marriage, what kind of person the inward character that you are, it's going to be discovered. If you want to know what kind of fella a fella is, you need to talk to his wife. If you want to know what kind of person a woman is, you need to talk to her husband. Now they may not tell you all the story, but I tell you, they qualified to tell you. They can tell you. No, dear friends, a person's marital status, not just his marital status, but the way in which he regards his marriage is of primary, of absolute first concern on the character of a person. It is a legitimate inquiry into. I can remember the time when nobody got divorced except Hollywood reprobates. I remember that time. that no one would even be thought of. He won't be faithful in any other kind of covenant. You find a man who will not honor his marriage vow, he'll break any kind of deal you make with him. You find a woman who will lie to her husband, she'll lie to you too. You find a person who will not accept his responsibility to his home, I wouldn't give him a job where I'd depend on him for anything. If it is not brought out and clarified there, it's not going to be anywhere else. Society stands or falls with it. You see how very germane, how meaningful this admonition is. Marriage is honorable. This is a kingdom institution. Now, because it is a kingdom institution, and it was brought into being by the king, it is something, I hesitate to use words like this, but folks use it sometimes, something come out of God's mind. I won't say God thought up, because God never thought of anything he had always thought. He never had a thought come to his mind. It's always been there. But it's something that come out of God's mind. Because of that, it is particularly hated and continually, perpetually assaulted by the prince of this world. That is, it is resented. Marriage, I'm talking about, folks, the king's institution. Marriage is maligned. That is, it's slandered. And is held in contempt by both, by the spirit of this world. I'll give you a few illustrations. Husbands, as providers, as heads of household, as fathers. You see how that sort of thing has been undermined and held in contempt. Oh, husbands don't need to be providers. Women need to make just as much money as men do. They need to have just as big an opportunity to be the big shot and be in charge of things as men do. Husbands are not providers. They're just something, you know, to fertilize the egg. Don't need them anymore. As heads. Oh no, we've got this feminist right sort of thing. And we want to glorify. Oh, yes. They spread this over the news real big. Some big auto company has put a woman in charge of making automobiles. All those men working for this woman. You'll understand this. Women's rights have a thing in the world to do this. This is assault against God and the marriage. Now, you can dismiss this if you want to, but I'm going to say it anyway. This is why it's hated, because it is instituted by God. As father, oh, who needs a daddy anymore? After all, these kids have been born. We need him anymore. We've got welfare, whatever else it needs to be, supplemented that, and we've got the social workers to take care of all these things. And as far as being morally taught, our schools will do that. And the social institutions will provide that. And our new books will provide that. And when we get down to the wives, mothers are contemptuously sneered at as brood fowls, something that has been used simply to bear children, wash diapers, fix clothes, keep house, scrub everything, servants, slaves, housekeepers, motherhood, homemakers. All of this has been pushed down and sneered at. As far as being obedient to their own husbands, why, you can't do that. That's wife abuse. Stand up for your rights, all of those things. All of these are assaults on marriage. And there is a continual promoting of alternatives, that is, corruptions. And it comes to us in the illegitimate indulgences of sexual pleasure. In spite of all this contempt against a man and a woman getting married and being faithful to one another for life and having a sphere and arena which both of them may exercise and satisfy all their emotional and physical needs, we're going to destroy the marriage. You've still got those needs and those drives. And so what are the alternatives? Well, it isn't celibacy and it isn't chastity. What is it? It's fornication. That's what it is. It is sex outside of the marriage. And sex doesn't make a marriage. If sex made a marriage, there wouldn't be any such thing as fornication. But it is essentially living like beasts. After all, what makes you to think that you have any more rights before God than a wolf, or a toad, or a snake? I mean, we're all competing for the same land and everything, aren't we? We're just beasts. And people live like, and worse than that. And I say this, and it might be a little radical, but I say that all sex of any kind and any sort exercised outside of where God ordained it to be, and that is in the marriage, the bed undefiled, is sexual perversion. Whether it is some of that other kind or the legitimate kind, it is still sex perversion. It is unrestrained wantonness. All kinds of perversions go beyond that. And this is something that doesn't stop. It is something that absolutely defies the sociologists and the biologists and everything else. They can understand why men should get pleasure from such things as, I mean, they get their kicks out of sex with little children. I mean, little kids. Of things like sadism, whipping and beating. And it gets worse than that, things that I couldn't even think in this pulpit, let alone enumerate. But people actually get their sexual kicks from things that are too vile to even come through my mind, let alone speak. And this sort of thing has been legitimized. It all comes out of this assault upon what God has ordained in this matter of kingdom living. He talks about marriage. Marriage. It all goes downhill from there. And beyond that, there's only thing that will give any explanation for these unholy, unnatural things that are all hated by God is that they're inflamed by demons. Demons. And there is no bondage, no addiction more terrible than these sexual addictions and bondages. There is no liberty from it outside of Christ. Then we have this matter of adultery, or the putting away, which the Bible calls treachery against your wife or against your husband. It's hated by God and devastated by the children. The Bible tells us in our text that God will judge. He will punish for all of these. And it is no empty threat. He has. He does. And make no mistake about it, dear friend, you're not going to get by with it. He will. Not only, this is something, dear friends, that not just the lake of fire, just hell waits for. You step outside of these bounds as ordered by God, and you suffer immediate consequences for it. And you don't have to guess about it. You know it. It's there. It devastates and robs the life. You can't afford the price of it. God will judge. Now let's look at our text and see what is said here. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 4. Marriage is honorable among all. The old King James says, in all. And the bed undefiled. Well, what does that mean? Well, first of all, let me tell you what it does not mean. It does not mean that marriage sanctifies sex perversion. It does not mean that simply because a man and a woman are married, anything they do behind the doors of their bedrooms, okay, because they're married. Marriage does not give license to perpetuate perversion on your body or anybody else's body. It does not say that marriage sanctifies everything. Doesn't mean that at all. Nor does it mean that marriage partners may do as they please to one another. That means simply because a man married a woman, he has the right to slap her around. Kick her out. Not buy her clothes. Keep her barefooted. Abuse her. It does not mean that the wife has the privilege simply because she got a man, put a ring in his nose, make a whip out of him. It certainly does not mean that simply because you're married that whatever you do within that enclave there is all right. I got a piece of paper here that says she's mine. Doesn't mean that at all. Nor does it mean it's all right if you just marry anybody. Bible clear about that. And you ought to have some cautions about that. Marriage doesn't cover up all that. Marriage doesn't cover sin. Doesn't sanctify sin. It only sanctifies that which God has ordained rightly. Now, here is what is actually said. The word marriage here does not mean married life. It means the wedding. It means that when that boy and that girl walk down the aisle, preacher stands here in front, and those vows are made, they give assent and they pledge their particular allegiance to one another, and the solemnization before God is made, that's what it meant, the marriage ceremony. Now, a lot of folks want to make nothing of that. Dear friend, it ain't nothing. It's something. It's in the presence of God. God, that's what the word is here. He's not talking about married life. He's talking about the wedding. Getting married. What you did before the justice of the peace or the judge or whatever it is. Oh, well, you said that, you know, that's just some words. No, sir, dear friend. That was something. That's what I'm talking about here. Marriage. Marriage. That is the wedding. When he says it's honorable, it means God honored it. This is before God. This is the presence of God. This isn't just two people taking up the shack up a little while and try it out. No, sir. Nobody ever do this. It's folks who decide we're going to get married. Now, the second part of it, the bed. The bed talks about the marriage life. That is, what goes on. That which was legitimized and done before God, that is undefiled. Now, what is said here is a little bit more than the fact that God said it's honorable and God said it's undefiled. What he's saying here is that let all honor the marriage. Let all keep the bed undefiled. This is what he's saying. God has said this. Therefore, it is incumbent upon me and you and everyone. Oh, that's everybody! Here's a man and a woman who got married. Let everybody honor that. Let it be honored. Here is a home. Here is a couple. Here are children being brought forth. Here is a family. Let everybody honor that. Let it be honored. I'm talking about kingdom living, folks. The world's not going to do that. We're talking about our responsibility ourselves. Let everyone honor that. Certainly. all hold it in great esteem and honor. Only we who are of this kingdom may honor marriage and mortify sexual lust and perversions. Only Christ is sufficient for that. You not. It is not within the power of flesh of mortal man to do this. It's bigger than you are. You can't handle it. I will agree and consent to that. Only Christ is sufficient. That's the reason we've got that admonition back in 28. Let us have grace that we may serve God acceptably. This is kingdom living. This is triumphant. All. Well, that means certainly everyone who is inside the marriage. That is, you the groom, you the husband, you the bride, you the wife. You're married now. Honor it. Well, you know, I meant what I said when I said those vows, and I really meant that, and I thought I loved him. And, yeah. Well, you know, she was so pretty, and she wasn't real honest with me about this, though. And I didn't, if she had squared with me, and I know what I knew now, well, that's too late now. Yeah, but you know, I believe that I'm better suited for such and such. And I believe, you know, he would have been a better match for me, and if we could just get out of this, I think I could do a little better next time. It's too late. You think about that. Let me tell you something. It might help you a whole lot. You listening? For nearly 28 years, I've been traveling around all over the country, and most of the time I would stay with a preacher and his wife. And sometimes I stayed with other church members and their wives. And usually they put me up with good families. They didn't put me up with one of them bad ones. Now, a few times I've been with them, but most of the time they put me up, I mean, with the cream of the crop. Let me tell you something, folks. There aren't very many real good marriages. There are certainly very few perfect marriages, if such a thing exists at all. And one of them got problems. Now, some of them are a whole lot better than others. But there was a reason why that phrase is there, for better or for worse. Well, it's going to be both. It's going to get better, and it's going to get worse. Count on it. That's the reason we have this admonition, let all honor the marriage. And we go into this thing, dear friend, not with, you know, I hope this person, I do too, but it ain't going to be. It also ought to be something of grave concern. Young men, young women, in your shopping, yes, you need to be careful about that. I know there's a lot of things you're not going to know about her, a lot of things she's not going to know about you, and you hope she doesn't find out about them. But she will. But at the most of there's going to be some, and you're going to live with them. Someone asked me the other day, what do you think about these marriages that are arranged by the parents? Oh, I said, they probably come out good as the rest of them do. You know, it's a miracle of God's grace. It is. And there are things that we're going to have to consider, but the overriding consequence and consideration of all of this, let all hold the marriage in honor. And the bed undefiled. God has given me this woman for the rest of my life. She's going to be what I make of her. This is my man. Ain't much to him. Everything else looks a lot better, but he's mine. And he's the only one I got. Let it not be defiled. All that are inside it, let it be honored. Nevertheless, in all of that, let it be honored. Also, it also means this. That everyone outside the marriage, in the consideration of it, this woman belongs to this man. I, therefore, may not defraud him, and I may not defile her. That's what that means. Let all honor the marriage. This man belongs to this woman. I may not covet him. He's not mine. He belongs to her. Well, she doesn't deserve him. You don't either. We honor the marriage. Irrespective of it all is to be honored. Now, what's done? Once the marriage is made, the wedding, what is over? Oh, I know, dear friend, this won't fly nowhere in the world, but it ought to fly high with you. May it help some of you. Once the marriage is over, once the vows, once the wedding's over, you done cut the cake. They done scattered the rice. It's all over your gone now. We must permit, we must tolerate, we must entertain nothing to ever dishonor this wedding. That's kingdom living. That's living on top of things. That's transcending the lust of the flesh, the talks of the world, the temptations, the cries of ourselves, the lies of everything else. That's going under, dear friend. That's defeated living. That's going down, down, down. Kingdom living transcends. It's triumphant. It's victorious. It's reigning with Christ. I'm going to tell you something, folks. When you walk out to the cemetery, you see that tombstone there, the wide one, covers two graves. One of them says, Mother. Of the daddy. And side by side. Gives her date. Everything. You remember that couple? Their children are walking around in the country. Everybody knows what mama did and what papa did and how they grew up, how they raised their children, their parents. As testimony, dear friends, that's triumphant. That's different. That's unusual. But that's kingdom living. This is something instituted by the King. We don't get any more fundamental than this. Let us never forget it. Shall we stand?